You're listening to episode 79 of the Mad Chatters podcast, March 30th, 2016.
Most everyone's mad here.
And welcome back to another episode of the Mad Chatters podcast, your very important date with the happenings at Walt Disney World and around the Disney universe. My name is Derek, and joining me today are my friends and co-host Matthew.
Howdy.
And Jeremy.
We're all mad here.
Oh. All right, Jeremy, you said you got something you want to discuss. What is it?
Yeah, I don't know if you all saw this video. I retweeted it, I think. Yeah, maybe. But I thought it was kind of cool. Steven Tyler celebrated, I believe, his 68th birthday this week. And he did so by going to Walt Disney World. And so there's a video of him exiting the Rock and Roller Coaster. I assume he wrote it. And he did write. So he tweeted something about checking in on his favorite roller coaster or whatever. But it was really neat because it's like spring break, Easter crowds, so the queues are really long. And he exited out the Fast Pass queue. So I guess for whatever reason, they took him out that way. So as he's going out, he's passing all these people. And of course, he's high-fiving. And just somebody behind him is videoing this as they're walking out. So people are like freaking out, which I would freak out too if you're in line for Rock and Roller Coaster. And all of a sudden, Steven Tyler just walks by you. That would be a very surreal meta moment right there. So I'd be like, this is the greatest meet and greet ever. Like, what a great
thing. Like, wait a minute.
I love that idea. What? That's what I would do. Steven Tyler!
You'd be like, I don't know what's happening anymore.
But anyway, so you just never know who you're going to see wandering around Walt Disney property, and you may have a cool moment like that. So,
you think he did anything else that day or just strictly went in to ride that attraction?
No, I'm pretty sure he, you know, enjoyed the rest of the park as well. So he looked to have the guides that, you know, the Walt Disney World guides, and he had some family members, I believe, with him. So he was wearing a shirt that said something about, like, Neverland is home or something to that effect. So yeah, Steven Tyler, big Disney fan, checking out his attraction, which I'm gonna say, if I ever get to star in a Walt Disney World attraction, I will be doing the exact same thing.
That's funny, because I was just thinking the opposite. Like, I bet he watches that video and is like, oh no, can we record that again today, please? Because
have you seen Steven Tyler? I mean, I doubt much embarrasses him, so.
That's a good point, yeah. All right, well, let's go ahead and kick off this episode with some good, some bad, and some ugly. On today's show, we're going to be discussing the good, bad, and ugly of attraction facades. So, you know, Disney, with their attractions, they have to make them look appealing. They can't just show you the rectangular warehouse that the attractions are in. They got to put something appealing and attractive in front of it to make you think that's what you're riding inside. So we're going to talk about where they've succeeded and where maybe they have missed the mark in those areas. So let's start with the good, as normal. And Matt, do you want to tell us yours?
Yes, I do. I'm glad I get to go first because I was so worried somebody would take this. And that is, my good is Splash Mountain.
Yep.
Because really, the entire thing that you see at Splash Mountain is just a big facade. It's just the whole thing is a big old fake.
It sure is. So much so, so much so that sometimes I convince myself that the ride really is in there and there's not a building behind it. It's like, I don't see it.
No, it's an interesting thing to see if you ever get to do one of the backstage tours. I don't know if they still do this or not, no promises, but when I did it a long time ago, we went behind the scenes, saw the show building for Pirates. Saw the show building for Splash Mountain, which is really like right next to each other, and it clicked to me that's how it all fits and everything, whether it's Haunted Mansion or whatever. That's how a facade works. Mm-hmm. The only thing that's really in that mountain is the lift hill, and I suppose the finale scene is kind of in the bottom of it. That kind of houses that. But other than that, you're in a show building behind the whole thing, so I think that's pretty impressive and elaborate.
So elaborate, yeah. Are you including, like, the fake, I guess the Brer Patch is what it is?
Yeah, the whole thing.
Yeah.
The whole kit and caboodle.
It's impressive, for sure.
I think it's pronounced Briar Patch.
Yes, you're right. I knew that was wrong. I was going to say the little cacti things. I'm like, no, wait, that's not right.
Oh, I see. No, in the waiting line, that's the thing that you always hear when they pass the signs for Brer Bear, Brer Fox, and Brer Rabbit. People always say, what does Brer mean? And then they're like, it's like Briar. And it's one of those things you're like, no.
Wrong.
No.
Wait, I don't know.
It's short for Brer is
brother, yeah.
Oh, I did not know that. There you go.
That's right. Yeah. So this Sunday at the local Baptist church, just call everybody Brer. Hey there, Brer Tom.
Hey, Brer Pastor.
Interesting.
Okay, my good is an attraction that I have drooled over numerous times on this podcast, but I couldn't think of anything else. So I'm going to say my good facade is the Enchanted Tiki Room. Again, the show building is hidden well, but that outside facade with that giant, I don't know, what do you
tower.
Call it? Tower or whatever.
Tiki tower, yeah.
Yes, I love it. I love the foliage outside. If you kind of, in between the entrance and the exit, if you kind of stand there where that water feature is, which is very underappreciated, just that nice water right there, and then kind of look towards the tower, beautiful, absolutely gorgeous looking, and a great picture spot there. I've taken several pictures, and I never get tired of that view. So the entrance to Enchanted Tiki, I think one of the reasons why it's underappreciated is because it's hard to see from a distance because of that god-awful carpets ride that blocks it. So you can't really...
That was Derek's good. Wait, that's Derek's good.
I know, you're ruining my answer, dang it. I'll just switch to Triceratops Spin instead.
Ah, classic.
It's hard to appreciate from a distance. So that kind of ruins it a little bit, I think. But it's still an amazing view. So next time you're over there in Adventureland, take a little time to enjoy the Enchanted Tiki Room.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that, to be honest. But it does really make Adventureland. Like, I think you would noticeably see a difference if that were gone. Like, it wouldn't even really feel like Adventureland.
Absolutely.
But that's funny that you said you couldn't really think of anything else, because I feel like Disney World is full of good facades, and it was hard for me to narrow it down.
It's not that I couldn't think of anything else. It was just I couldn't think of anything better than the Tiki Room.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. But I did narrow it down, and I went with Spaceship Earth. I know it feels so obvious. Does that count as a facade, right?
Like the whole building?
Sure. I mean, like it hides an attraction.
When I thought facade, I thought false, like fake building.
Okay, well, my other answer was Under the Sea, Journey of the Little Mermaid with Prince Eric's castle.
Oh, that was almost my number one.
Because that's like a true facade, I guess. But the reason I said Spaceship Earth is because until I went my first time, despite how many times I'd seen pictures and videos of Spaceship Earth, I had no idea there was an attraction in there. And I know I'm not the only one to be unaware of that. And the fact that this beautiful sphere contains an attraction that's still really impressive to me and I still really enjoy, I just think that's genius. In fact, our boy Jim Corcus, I found some notes he wrote. I think it was mouseplanet.com. And he was talking about the history of the sphere. And he said, before considering a geodesic sphere, different design structures were considered for Spaceship Earth, including the Roman Parthenon in the 2nd century, the dome of St. Peter's Cathedral in the Vatican, and the 125-foot diameter steel frame supporting a map of the world at the 64-65 New York World's Fair. A golden geodesic dome, inspired by the dome in Montreal, was also seriously considered.
Nothing he ever says makes sense.
They also considered just a clear glass fishbowl that you could see the attraction from the outside.
That didn't resemble a bowl at all, actually. It was just three windows.
Anyway, I believe all that.
Chuckles.
It makes sense to me. But I'm so glad they landed on the sphere we have today, because it is a work of art.
Hey, I'm flipping through pictures on my phone, and I just want to give an honorable mention. A good facade at Universal Islands of Adventure would be Poseidon's Fury. I just saw that picture, and that is a great facade. So.
I will give that to you.
That is a good facade, because it's like something really great is in there, but it's not.
Yeah, I would argue that the facade is three times better than the attraction itself.
Infinitely better than the attraction.
Okay, let's go on to the bad. Jeremy, why don't you start this time?
Okay, moving on to bad. Now, just a reminder to our listeners and maybe some new listeners out there, bad does not mean necessarily bad, but it does mean we like it, but it needs some work.
We like to change the meaning of basic English words on this show.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because we said, English, that's too easy. Let's just make it up as we go.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we said. So my bad is Star Tours. And the reason why I picked Star Tours is when you approach it, it looks very nice. But once you're in the queue, the magic is lost. Now, I know, and you all know, as good hardcore Disney fans, the purpose behind why it looks terrible from the back. And that is, you were supposed to be entering a movie set, because this was, at the time, MGM Studios, so it had that studio-like feel. However, as we know, that identification as the park is going away. And so it doesn't make sense to have the facade look awful anymore.
And what you mean by that is, like, behind the trees, like, they're only half there, and behind is just steel structure with, like, show notes and things like that.
What's that thing called? A tom-tom or whatever? The
at-at?
At-at. It's only half of it, so, you know, again, it's that feel of, it truly is a facade, in the definition of the word, that it's a false front. But you don't get that anymore, because the whole feel of the park is not, hey, this is a working studio. Now you're just like, why is there only half of that thing there? You know, why is it so
bad? You know what the worst part of that used to be? Before they did the new part, the updated Star Wars thing and the Star Tours thing, Adventures Continue, was when you entered the building the first time. It used to be like you were on the backside of a soundstage. So there was literally like plywood facades on either side with like show notes and markings on it, and it was really bizarre. And then as you turn the corner, obviously it became what it is. But they did away with that with the Adventures Continue. But I know. I feel you.
Yeah. That is so weird, because then if you're going to have this idea that you are, again, a studio, this is some kind of a set, then there needs to be some element of being on a set in the attraction itself. Because the feel you get is, no, you are now in Star Wars.
Well, you were entering the movie, yeah.
Yeah, and so it just seems like there's something lost in translation there of, this is a movie set. All of a sudden, nope, this is really is. We're Star Tours with Rex, you know, or whatever that character's name was. So.
Okay, I can get behind that. When you first said Star Tours, I thought you were talking specifically about the AT-AT, and I love that thing. I think it's a sight to behold.
No, I like the AT-AT, too. I just wish the other half was AT-AT there.
No, I do. I totally get that, yeah. I think Hollywood Studios is kind of full of those. In fact, I will go next, because one of mine is at Hollywood, or my bad is at Hollywood Studios, and that's not the same reason, but I said Rock and Roller Coaster.
That was my runner-up, in case somebody took Star Tours, so very good.
And the reason it's not my ugly is because I actually think it's really awesome. I think it's a really cool facade. I love the way the car comes across the whole pathway and out all the way to the front of the entrance of that little plaza there. Great. It just does not fit at the end of Sunset Boulevard. Not at all. Everything on that street is themed so precisely to early 20th century Hollywood. And then you have this big old guitar with a pick that used to say Haynes. I don't know if it still does. starring Aerosmith. Like, it just does not fit at all. And it bothers me a little bit.
To their credit, though, it is at least you have to turn that corner to see it. It's not like it's, you know, right out front there. But I do agree with you. I feel like they've lost some of the detail they could have put into that guitar.
Like what?
I don't know. It just kind of looks cheap to me. Hmm. Maybe it's the paint on it.
It's the bright red paint. It's like, here's an electric guitar. Like a All-Star movie or All-Star Music or something.
Yes, totally. I definitely get an All-Star Music vibe from that. Yes.
It's so big.
I've never thought of that, but you're so right.
And then don't they have like a mural out there as well of like Aerosmith?
Yeah, it's on the building. The big poster that says Rock and Roller Coaster starring Aerosmith.
Okay.
Cartoon mural kind of.
Yeah. They have those throughout the park though.
And there used to be the little Haynes sticker on the...
Yeah, on the pick.
Because nothing says rock and roll like Waddy Taddy.
That's right.
Anyway, like I said, it's awesome. It bothers me.
Mm-hmm. My bad is Dinosaur. And I love Dinosaur, but I think that the facade for Dinosaur is partly why people have no idea what Dinosaur is. And I don't know how they... I don't know how they could fix that without, like, giving it away. Because I get the whole thing. It's like you're going to the Dino Institute. And it's like a, you know, it's a scientific museum-like establishment where you're going to test some of their latest equipment. It's not like you're going to ride the dinosaur ride thing as you know it. But I don't know. Something bigger and grander would have sufficed. I feel like I'm entering, like, a rural public library.
Totally. I 100% agree with this. It is hands down the most intense attraction in Animal Kingdom, one of the most intense in all of Walt Disney World, and that building could not be more nondescript. It's like, we're going into a little exhibit here.
Mm-hmm. But isn't that the point? Because in the pre-show, we're not supposed to be going on an adventure. That comes later. In the pre-show,
we're supposed to be getting on a time machine, for crying out loud. It does not look like a facility that would have a time machine sitting inside of it. It looks like it's a building that you would go to rent a VHS copy of Finding Nemo.
I kind of like the little, like, you know, the little cheesy displays they have in the, you know, in the front queue there right before you get to the Bill Nye section. I kind of like those, that they just feel they have that little, like you said, rural library, little museum.
You could use a little work. It's kind of crammed back there, too. Like, there's nothing that draws you to it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they have the big, what is that thing? An Albersaurus? Algarosaurus? Algarosaurus?
Iguanodon.
I was way off.
Aladar is his name.
Okay. I was...
Matt, be honest, you just wish it looked more like Chester and Hester's Dinorama.
Yeah. I don't have much love to spread around.
They need to just expand that theme all the way towards Dinosaur.
Oh, God help us.
Okay, well, let's get to it. Let's get to our ugly. I'll go first this time. And I have to say, it's a small world in Fantasyland. No.
That is mine!
Sorry. Except I'm not. That's okay. Because it's so true. And especially when you see Disneyland, which might be my favorite facade of any Disney attraction, or at least one of them. I love the one in Disneyland. And then at Disney World, it's pretty much just the sign above the door. That's all you get, because it's supposed to mess with the rest of the kind of, you know, fair-type medieval theming they've got going on, which I get, but talk about nondescript. It's like, I think there's an attraction in this little doorway if you just walk in. Oh, yeah, sure enough. So lame.
I don't even like the theme of the medieval tents. They could have done better with that concept. It's just like a square storefront. That's all it looks like. And then, there's a sign. Oh, this is Small World. Okay. So I agree. It's boxy and it's just unappealing.
Mm-hmm.
I'll grant you that Disneyland is 100 times better, but I always kind of liked going into that. It's a Small World and how you kind of descend into it. I thought that was cool how it's like a little... lower level water ride. I like that.
Well, perhaps, but you can't deny that it's very, very basic out front.
I have not denied that. I said Disneyland is 100 times better.
That's all I needed to hear.
Okay. My ugly is... Actually, no, Jeremy, you go.
My ugly was Small World, so you go.
Oh, that's right. That's why I was going to say I'm just going to go. My ugly is the entire front half of Tomorrowland. All of it.
Aww.
Like Stitch and Monsters,
Stitch's
Inc.
Stitch's Great Escape, MILF, and Buzz Lightyear's Space Ranger Spin. I think the entire thing, it's everything's terrible there. From the 90s, 98 till the current, the current date, everything they've done there is god-awful.
That's kind of sad. I really like the colors of the lights, but I can't really blame you for saying that.
No. Let me rephrase then. I enjoy all of New Tomorrowland that existed in 1994. I don't like the facades for Stitch's Great Escape, Monsters, Inc., Laugh Floor, and Buzz Lightyear. Mm-hmm. As in the cheesy, tacky, Vegas-style vertical signs they just slapped on the side of the poles.
Yeah, the sign for Buzz Lightyear is hideous.
Maybe this is more of a sign thing, but Buzz Lightyear is as a facade, that little archway with the sliding doors.
Yeah.
It's like I'm going into a cheap Buzz Lightyear Toy Story somewhere. Toy Story. Toy Store somewhere.
Womp womp. Double entendre.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I do agree with that.
They're ugly.
Well, the fans have demanded it, and it is back. It is the segment we call You Be the Judge, where we debate Disney topics.
Yeah! Order in the court.
Now, Jeremy cannot get mad if he does not win either of these debates, because this was his idea to bring back this segment. So without further ado, I think, Jeremy, you and Matt should begin.
All right, Matt and I, the only reason I brought it up is because I feel like I need to avenge my father's honor. So,
hey, wait, I didn't explain the segment. Why don't you tell our listeners what this is all about, just in case they are new.
Alrighty. So two chatters have agreed to debate a topic. The third chatter is a judge, a non-biased judge who judges the argument simply by the merit of the argument and not his own personal opinion. And then a winner is decided and who is the master debater. So Matt and I will be going first, and we will be debating Liberty Square or New Orleans Square, which is better.
Ooh.
And I will let Matt have the floor first.
My topic, the one I chose to take this, and that is Liberty Square. I'm going to defend Liberty Square as superior to New Orleans Square. Without getting too much into the history that's apparently there with Liberty Square, it represents our nation's founding in 1776. It represents the 13 original colonies, and it represents the dream that was and is America. Unless Donald Trump is elected president. Now, we won't dwell on the history too much because not everybody appreciates history as much as I do. What I'm going to dwell on here is the attractions and the food that you can find at Liberty Square. My second favorite attraction in anywhere of Disney parks is here, and that is the Haunted Mansion, which I think fits perfectly here in this early American themed section, because it's off in the distance, it's in the woods, you know, you're riding the Liberty Bell riverboat, or you're on Tom Sawyer Island, or you're coming out of the Hall of Presidents, and you look over, and there's that creepy old house on top of the hill that's there. Very New England, Gothic-style architecture fits well, in contrast to the plantation home that's so well kept, sitting right in the middle of New Orleans Square, that does not say anything haunted or attraction, really, about it. Now, Hall of Presidents is, you know, it's a sleeper. You know, you can go in there for a nice, cool break in the middle of the day. So let's not dwell too much on the substance of the attraction and just the goodness that is that 60-degree air conditioning in the middle of a hot day that you come in. You can park it right there in the gallery at the front, listen to the dude that's been working there for 20 years talk about history, and look at all the paintings and the busts, and then you go into the Hall of Presidents and enjoy 25 minutes of solid air conditioning and the voice of Morgan Freeman. And one tearful moment. You know, there is a tearful moment in there that's good. You can wake up for that part. It features the voices of, ironically, Ronald Reagan, Bill Clinton, and George W. Bush together. and it's really a truly emotional moment. Then let's go over to the Sleepy Hollow Inn Tavern. What's it called? Sleepy Hollow?
I think it's Sleepy Hollow Refreshments, maybe?
Refreshments, naturally, yes. Very early American word. Now, this place used to carry a wonderful spicy chicken waffle sandwich that I have never tried, but I've heard someone that did and they enjoyed it thoroughly, that had some buffalo chicken, a type of slaw on it, and it's good. It's gone now, but in its place is a waffle sandwich that has fruit, bananas, strawberries, and or blueberries, and Nutella, that wonderful, wonderful chocolatey hazelnut spread brought to us by the Dutch. And how appropriate that you would have an import from the Dutch there in New England. Let's take, for instance, also the detail that comes down through the middle of the street, which I enjoy pointing out to people, that dark black line, brown line through the middle of the street that supposedly represents the raw sewage. That's just quintessential Disney detail. There's no sign that says that's what it is. There's no description somewhere that says that's what it is.
This is poop.
Yeah, this
right
is poop.
Here.
Okay, Nikon's picture spot. Speaking of picture shots, one of the greatest picture shots in any Disney theme park anywhere can be found here, thanks to the kinetic energy that is brought to us by the Liberty Bell Riverboat, whose steam billows out of the pipes on top. The wheel is turning in the back, and there in the distance is Big Thunder Mountain's peak. There's the Barrel Bridge on Tom Sawyer Island, and there, perfectly centered between the oak trees, is Splash Mountain's flume. And at night, just coming all together in the dusk, is one of the most magical, beautiful spots in any Walt Disney theme park anywhere. I give you Liberty Square.
All right. I'm going for a different strategy here because in reflecting on what I do wrong during these debates, I think sometimes I talk too much. So I'm not going to talk about history either, even though New Orleans Square and Disneyland has a lot of history. Of course, as Matt mentioned, there's beautiful architecture, but come on. When you are in New Orleans Square, you feel like you're in New Orleans.
Projects.
You are there with the beautiful decorations, the beautiful ironwork, the second floor balconies. It's just there. But like a milking stool, my argument stands on three legs. Pirates of the Caribbean, the original, Club 33, and Palm Frites. All three things that I know Derek and America genuinely loves. And where do you find those? Not in Liberty Square, in New Orleans Square.
And that's the end.
Do you want it to be the end?
Just asking. Okay. All right. Jeremy, you are so lucky you said Palm Frites because you didn't even mention Haunted Mansion, which I will disagree with, Matt. Fits the theming great in New Orleans Square.
Well, most milking stools only have three legs, so okay. I couldn't add a fourth one.
You had to make a sacrifice. I get it. I am going to have to side with Jeremy on this one.
Woohoo!
And my mind was not made up before, even though I do prefer New Orleans Square.
I'd like to call a point of order.
Okay.
And the point of order being that Jeremy has reminded you of things that you enjoy, but has not given a convincing argument. But I'll leave that for you to sit on with your conscience tomorrow.
You know what? I am torn because I feel like Jeremy didn't quite present all the wonderful things New Orleans Square has to offer.
It's as if I was trying to convince Jeremy of something, and I said, Golden Girls, Dolly Parton and purple.
But at least, but it was relevant. Man, you would have him in your pocket with that debate. No.
I don't like to be pigeonholed, okay? So I am more than that.
But for real, those palm frites are God's gift to this earth. And they are wonderful. And Club 33 is also wonderful. And the ironwork is also wonderful.
Otherwise known as French fries.
No, they are so much more than French fries. That garlic dipping sauce.
Like potato chips with garlic mayonnaise.
No, so not true. Matt, a couple problems I have with your argument. You went on and on about how Haunted Mansion fits the theming of like early colonial America.
Mm-hmm.
But then you talked about the air conditioning being the big sell in Hall of Presidents, which I'm pretty sure they did not have at the time.
Yeah.
And you also...
It is same... not supposed to be turn of the century America. It's a homage to turn of the century America.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also, that chicken sandwich was not buffalo. I just have to point that out. But
oh, it was spicy.
Sweet and spicy. But anyway...
I feel like Leo DiCaprio, like everybody was rooting for me. And even though my argument wasn't the greatest, everybody's happy I won. Just like
I kind of feel betrayed greatest. Because I think that we had kind of secretly consigned that you would lose every debate ever. So now I'm just kind of like,
for the record, I want to make this clear. We didn't decide that until after the last episode. This is not some conspiracy against you, but after you whined. So much, Matt was like, so pretty much now from now on, we're just not going to let him win, right?
The Bible say your sins will find you out, and you all have been found out. The conspiracy has been exposed.
No. Yeah, but you definitely had me at palm frites. Well done. Well done.
This is like our own version of House of Cards. It just is here. Okay. Why don't I judge next, since I won? Let me bask in the glow for a few minutes. Okay.
Yeah, bask.
I will go first, since I'll give Matt a little bit of a break. Matt and I are talking about snacks at Walt Disney World. And we're talking about those snacks that are just iconic Disney World treats that should never go away. And I'm saying the Mickey's Premium Ice Cream Bar is more irreplaceable than the Dole Whip.
More irreplaceable. Okay.
So more iconic.
It's better.
I'm not arguing that. I'm saying the Dole Whip needs to go before the ice cream bar goes. And here are my reasons. First of all, I mean vanilla ice cream. From ages 1 to 101, it is almost universally loved. And then you put that chocolate coating on it. You name me one in 1,000 people that doesn't like that. It's just, it appeals to all.
Surely I could find one in 1,000 people, but anyways.
I bet you can't, and don't call me Shirley. So, secondly, Walt Disney World will always have snacks shaped like Mickey Mouse. It has to. Kids love it. Adults love it. You can't get away from it. I mean, think about the ice cream sandwiches, the pretzels, the waffles. I could keep going, except that's all I can think of, so I can't keep going. But we need one with ice cream on a stick. We don't have that. So, it fits the branding. The Mickey bar does. And food on sticks, corn dogs, everything else. It just fits for Walt Disney World. Dole Whip, a little out there. You know what? Ice cream bars, they're not going to get rid of them because they take absolutely zero manpower to make. I mean, you just crank them out on whatever machine they got. And they take zero manpower to sell. Every time you order a Dole Whip, you have to get a cast member to go back to the machine, crank out this. It's just costing Disney money. So let's be realistic. If they had to keep one, they're going to keep the premium ice cream bar. Now, let me talk about the Dole Whip for a second, because Adventureland kind of has two iconic snacks going for it, the Dole Whip and the Citrus Swirl. You don't need two. That's just crazy talk. Adventureland is so small. Why do you need two snacks that you can only get in Adventureland? So if you got rid of the Dole Whip, at least you'd still have the Citrus Swirl. If you got rid of the Mickey's Premium Ice Cream Bar... That's it. No more ice cream bars. And that would make America and the world sad. And finally, I want you to imagine...
What is going on?
You like this debate. I can tell. You need to stop.
Sorry, go ahead.
Take a second. Breathe. Okay. Close your eyes. Imagine you're waiting for a parade on Main Street USA. Maybe you're waiting for the fireworks. And you need a treat, you can't run to Adventureland and go get a Dole Whip. You want something that you can hold in your hand without it getting cold. Your hand's not going to get cold. You're going to hold the Mickey's Premium Ice Cream Bar. It's the perfect parade viewing snack. Because then at the end, you know what? You can chew on that stick. I mean, I did not laugh at that. That's not a ridiculous comment. You can chew on the stick and love it.
That sounds like a thing you say to somebody when you're mad at them.
Oh, go chew a stick.
On a stick. Go chew on a stick.
Love it.
And like it. I rest my case. Mickey's Premium, there's a reason it's called that, ice cream bar.
Well, for those of you out there that actually understand debates and understand argumentative fallacies, you'll understand that all of Derek's arguments towards the end there were completely ad absurdum, that we don't need two iconic refreshments in Adventureland, as if, you know, one cannot exist apart from the other. The assertion that people like ice cream on sticks, as if that somehow makes it better. And this whole scenario of watching a parade, that's not the argument. The argument is not which makes a better parade snack and how far away Adventureland is from the parade. The parade was brought in as a red herring to throw you off of the real argument here, which is which is more iconic.
Objection. Ice cream on a stick is better because it's less messy, which I care about.
Thank you. And if we're going to talk about iconic, I have to remind everyone here that maybe a year ago, they swapped the locations for the Sunshine Tree and Aloha Isle. Aloha Isle used to be very upfront in Adventureland if you were entering from Main Street. Sunshine Tree Terrace was there beside the Tiki Room. And they swapped those, I think in part due to the level of success for the Dole Whip, and there was more line space over there. It drew people to that part of the park beside Tiki Room behind the magic carpets. And when they did that, they intrinsically linked, which it makes sense to do so anyway, Aloha Isle and the famous Dole Whip with the Enchanted Tiki Room. The Enchanted Tiki Room being the original use of audio animatronics in any Disney park, invented by Walt Disney himself and his Imagineers in 1964, and way before that, but finalized and completed at the Tiki Room Disneyland in 1964. If anything is quintessentially Walt Disney World and Disney parks, it is audio animatronics, and that harkens back to the Tiki Room, which is now intrinsically linked to Aloha Isle and the Dole Whip. Aside from that, can you taste or think about pineapple anywhere now as a Disney fan without thinking Dole Whip and immediately thinking Tiki Room? And you start singing the song and suddenly your day is just much better. Anybody can go down to Kroger and buy vanilla ice cream on a stick with chocolate coating. Heck, that's Dairy Queen's thing. It's not a Disney thing. It's Dairy Queen's thing. The Dilly Bar. You know what they call it? The Dilly Bar.
I'm sorry, is Mr. Dilly shaped like Mickey? No.
What a bum name for a thing, a dilly bar. You basically have a Mickey-shaped dilly bar.
Go chew on a stick, you dumb dilly bar.
I would also call ad absurdum on the fact that you cannot replace the Mickey bar. You could easily change it up. Throw some caramel in there. Do something different. Vanilla ice cream with a chocolate coating. I would put money on the fact that the majority of hardcore Disney fans do not enjoy the Mickey bar and bypass it for other refreshments such as the wonderful mango cream bar or the strawberry fruit bar. And I mean, the Dole Whip, I mean, people love the Dole Whip. You don't hear anybody go on and on about the Mickey bar for the sake of the Mickey bar, but the Dole Whip, now you do. So I think all roads point us to the iconic Dole Whip as being more irreplaceable than the Mickey bar as we know it. Vanilla ice cream with a chocolate coating on a stick.
Matt, your listing earlier of Golden Girls, purple, and whatever else you said was missing the Tiki Room, but you just nailed it right there.
I just brought it up.
You just pomfreted Jeremy.
Both of you.
I think that's a thing now.
Oh, you done got pomfreted.
both of you went into directions that I found to be borderline ridiculous. But I had the biggest problem with some of Derek's arguments. First off, I'm pretty sure it takes people to make those Mickey bars and to sell them. They're not just laying in a basket where you just put a five down and take one.
They just crank them out. That's what you say, crank them out.
They do. They crank them out in the machine, and the only thing someone has to do is pick it up and give it to you. A Dole Whip, it takes like a good 10 seconds to get that out of the machine.
Okay, but it still requires a cast member that is being paid to stand there.
No, I could also say, you stay, I'll reach into the cooler and get it myself. That's what I usually do.
Stay in line, sir. Stay in line. The judge is speaking. Also, the crutch of your argument is everything is better with a Mickey Mouse and a Mickey Mouse-shaped head. I find that to be a very weak argument. And so, in terms of being iconic, I think Matt nailed it as far as proving that Dole Whip is definitely a more of an iconic feel, especially amongst Disney fans and Disney Parks fans. I don't think you're going to find a lot of defenders of the Mickey-shaped Dilly Bar. So, I'm going to give it to Matt.
I guarantee you, if you got rid of the Mickey Bar and the Dole Whip, you'd get more angry comments about the Mickey Bar.
I doubt it.
That sounds like a good poll for the fans. Maybe we'll take it to the tweeter. But at this point, the judges,
we'll do our own March Madness thing. Vote. Team Dole Whip, team boring Mickey Bar.
Before we even start, we're in the final two, the championship.
Okay, final debate. Sorry.
Last debate. Jeremy and me, we are talking about extinct attractions. Jeremy, do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
Yeah, I can go first.
Okay.
I'm going to argue that they ought to bring back Horizons. Now, Matt, you have had the benefit of actually riding, experiencing Horizons.
Hey, wait. Can I know the two of them front here?
Yeah, yeah. We're talking about which attraction they should bring back. His is Horizons. Mine is Mickey Mouse Review.
Okay.
I want you to think about the current state of America. I want you to think about the current state of our world. And what is one thing that we lack? Hope. There just doesn't seem to be any hope. Even with an upcoming presidential election, as people are looking at the candidates, they're saying, is that all we have to choose from? There just is no hope. And I want you to think about the current state of Epcot. While there is some positives there, particularly in Future World, there seems to lack hope as well. Everything is kind of dated and rustic and just falling apart, and it's in serious need of an overhaul. So what better than to bring back a classic with an updated twist, and that be Horizons. As you know, Horizons was a beautiful attraction that everybody loved that pointed to the future and what the future would be like. And so as Horizons would be reinstated into Epcot, it would give us not only hope for the park, but also hope for what the future of humanity might be, both in sense of technological advances, medical advances, communal living advances. We would leave this attraction as they left the attraction for so many years that it was opened, feeling hopeful about the future of the world that we live in. And so that's why I want to bring back Horizons, not just because it's fun and a great attraction, but because it genuinely inspires us to be better than what we are.
Hold on, I have to wipe off some tears for a second. Okay. Tears of disgust, because my argument will say that that's ridiculous.
Because that's a thing.
Hope is ridiculous. No one wants to feel inspired for the future.
Here's my problem with bringing back Horizons. It only adds to the current problem that Future World is facing, and that is it's stuck in the past. Future World is not moving forward like it promised. It's stuck in the past. It's stuck in the 80s. If you bring back one of those 80s attractions, you're only adding to the problem. But let's move.
Your Honor, I would invite the opposing counsel to clean out his ears and rewind the recording of what I just said and to listen about how we are going to be hopeful for the future. We're not going to just stick an 80s attraction into Future World. We're going to keep an element of nostalgia there, but also to update it to our modern times.
All right, well, call me in 2020 when it's already outdated once again. But you know what's not outdated? Disney characters. Mickey Mouse, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, the Three Caballeros. These characters are timeless. They're classic and will always be. And that's why if you bring back the Mickey Mouse review, you make everyone happy. It is the perfect fit for Fantasyland, as was established when it first opened and as was established when it went away and everybody realized that was the perfect fit for Fantasyland. You're not going to find anything else that fits better than that. Listen, I love PhilharMagic. I do. But we have two other 3D shows already in Walt Disney World, and we have countless 2D films. I mean, think of World Showcase. It's full of films. We don't need another screen-based attraction, especially in Magic Kingdom. What is this, Universal? So I say we get rid of PhilharMagic, bring back those animatronics, because it's so much more exciting to see dwarfs pop up and a curtain open, and there's a Three Caballeros. It's so much more exciting to see those animatronics moving than it is to see a screen. I mean, I could watch this on Netflix at home. I mean, sure, I won't get sprayed with water, but aren't we all glad for that? Now, if you want to keep the effects, you could. You know, you could spray some water as someone, maybe the dwarfs are whistling and like you feel their spit or something.
Gross.
As they whistle. You know, the sound can come through the seats. You could get some aromas if you want. But it doesn't matter because the animatronics will always beat screens. And that's why the Mickey Mouse review needs to come back to its home in Fantasyland. The end.
Let's just be honest. What kind of animatronics are we going to be getting in this kind of attraction? Olaf, Kristoff, Elsa, Anna. Do we really need more of that?
I would absolutely love Frozen animatronics. I really would. I would love animatronics of any kind, especially when you see what they can do with animatronics nowadays. If we're going to update Horizons, you know they're going to update Mickey Mouse Review. Look at how fluid the motions are of the Three Caballeros now that they've been moved to Grand Fiesta Tour. That's what you're going to get throughout the attraction.
Your Honor, he claims to love animatronics, but ask him how much he loves Hall of Presidents.
I love the animatronics in Hall of Presidents. I've said that before. I think the animatronics are great. It's the fact that we have a show in Disney World dedicated to presidents that I'm like, but that's a story for another time.
Well, Derek, I'm going to have to go with Jeremy on this one.
Woo-hoo! Okay,
you're just mad at me because I broke our pact.
Well, yeah, but no, the more you argue, the more you get away from point. And I think that you ended up thinking that the debate was Mickey Mouse Review or PhilharMagic, and that was not the argument I need to bring back. The question was, which is better to bring back, Horizons or Mickey Mouse Review? Not how happy I am at what will be replaced. But if we're going to go with that argument, then I'd lose Mission Space 10 times over Mickey's PhilharMagic to have Horizons come back in its place. So I'll have to stick it with Jeremy. I don't care if it is the 80s version with the same smells, the same narration, the same music, everything about it. And it is not stuck in the past. It was never stuck in the past. That's why I get tired of people saying about Horizons. I mean, are we living in space yet? No. Do we have drones completely growing and harvesting oranges in the groves yet? No.
Because we gave up on that dream.
Are we living under the water with seals that look in your window at night? No, we're not.
My neighbor looks in my window every night. That's pretty close.
Well, fine.
Well, folks, Jeremy went from 0-2 to 2-0. And so I'm just going to leave it on this and drop the mic. Only Judy can judge me now.
His head is not going to shrink back to its normal size for weeks after this.
Nope.
Wow, we did terrible on that pact.
Hey, you started it.
I know. On last last week's episode, we talked to a few people who had several first impressions recently of Walt Disney World, of the various attractions and rides and shows and things like that. And it got us thinking, how does our impression of Walt Disney World now differ from our impression of Walt Disney World when we first saw it? So today we're going to be talking about those attractions that have grown on us over time, things that maybe we didn't appreciate too much the first time we experienced them, but now we have really come to embrace and love them. But we're also going to talk about a few of those things that really the first impression makes all the difference, because it only you only cool on it as time goes by, and maybe it's not quite your favorite thing a few years after you first experienced. So let's end on a high note and start with those things that maybe you don't love as much now as you did when you first experienced them. So Matt, why don't you start with one, and that's the park we'll start with, whatever you say.
Okay, one that I certainly did cool on that I used to be obsessed with is Peter Pan's Flight. And when I first like remember this, when I was like 7, I was just fascinated by the, you know, the hanging attraction vehicle, the pirate ship, you know, the miniature London scene, and all of that. You know, that's really impressive, and it's still very impressive, don't get me wrong. But it's certainly like I can probably never do that again and be okay now. And that one of the last times I rode it, it's not, I don't think it's a difference of I was little then and now I'm old and, you know, the magic is gone and that thing, because I still love a lot of things like that. But it just needs some work. I think it needs a big old update. I mean, it's clearly like there's a black wall, there's a fire escape. I feel like the little London scene's kind of trashy looking. There's always trash laying down there on it. I don't know. It's short. I've kind of cooled on it. And maybe it's just the immense lines that are always there that I just don't want to wait in. It has become what used to be like my favorite attraction probably when I was younger has become a, like, eh.
Well, that's sad. I mean, you all know where I stand on Peter Pan's Flight. I absolutely love it. And I hope I don't get to that point.
You're not supposed to stand. You're supposed to stay seated.
I did wonder if I was going to ask if the length of the queue had something to do with that answer.
Probably, yeah, and that I never would ever use a fast pass for it unless it was available like after my first 3 or whatever, and it never is because people go crazy for it.
Yeah. Well, this isn't in the same park, but I want to say one that I have because it kind of the length of the queue is kind of one of the reasons, and it's Toy Story Midway Mania. Mm-hmm. It's no secret that I do not love that attraction, and partly because I'm terrible at it. But we were there, I assume you guys remember this, we were there during its soft opening.
Yeah.
And so it was so exciting to be some of the first people to ride it, loved the technology, I thought it was one of the coolest things I had done. But now when I look at the line, I'm like, okay, it's not that good. Like, let's calm down. And now I really don't even care for it all that much. Like, we rode it in Disneyland this last time because we got to our last day, and it's like, oh, we haven't done that. But honestly, I could go a long time without riding it and be totally fine.
I like it still.
That's fine. I mean, I still like Peter Pan's Flight.
I don't think I've cooled on it.
Yeah, I cooled on it pretty quickly.
I mean, this attraction is almost 10 years old. I mean, it's eight coming up 8 years old. That's ridiculous. How does this thing still have 90 plus minutes? I know the park sucks currently, and there's not a lot to do, especially for children.
That's all there is to it. And I don't know that it's fair to base our rating of it on the wait time. I said that about Peter Pan's Flight, but it really is about more than
no,
that.
No, mine is too, absolutely. I mean, you all know I hate that attraction. I mean, I really just don't enjoy it.
I think that's user error.
I think it has, yes.
That does have something to do with it, I'll admit it.
I mean, Jessica hates it too, and Buzz Lightyear, because she's bad at them.
Well, and it kind of hurts my wrist, and I'm like, I don't want to have to work when I go on an attraction. Like, it's exhausting to me.
Toy Story Midway Mania was on my list as well. I'm going to go back to the Magic Kingdom, and I feel like I'm going to get some judgment for this one, but I'm going to say it anyways. I initially enjoyed Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor, and I know its placement in the park is not the best. I absolutely agree. I think you take that attraction, you stick it in the new Toy Story or Pixar Place area there at Hollywood Studios. It fits better there. But I remember our first couple of trips really, like, going out of my way to go to Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor. I even got selected to be that guy. If you've ever been in the attraction, you know what I'm talking about. But I just remember about the third or fourth time in going, okay, this isn't good anymore. This sucks, you know? And
yeah, but it's like, it's almost designed to be like just a first time. The only thing that ever really like changes is the last one where they tell the jokes, and those are never funny. It's just cute that you can send your joke in and they tell it.
They're funny when they choose Jeremy in mine's joke. That was not good English, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, this is funny that our personalities are on display in every show, but so far, like 10 minutes into this topic, Derek hates something because he's bad at it, and Jeremy likes something because they made a big deal out of him in it. I mean, am I right?
No! I told you the reasons I don't like Toy Story Midway Mania. I still like Monsters, Inc.
And I don't like something because it brings up painful, nostalgic feelings of the magic not being there anymore. I don't have a big list. I don't have a big list of things I've, quote-unquote, cooled on since the first time. I have just one more, and that is Rock and Roller Coaster. And I enjoy it, and it's something that, you know, certainly when people go, it's like a must-do. So I really don't know how to place it. It's almost like the more times you ride it, the more it is like the ride itself. It just, you know, it builds up to that moment when you take off, and everybody sees that, and that's what you're waiting on. And then it happens, and then about 5 seconds into the ride, it's like, yay. And then you know when you know it's really over when you see the opposing traffic sign, and that's when it's like, after the Beverly Hills Loop, and then you see the opposing traffic, it's like the last leg of Big Thunder Mountain. It's like, and then you're done. After the initial takeoff, it's just kind of, And so
yeah, I would agree with you.
When you learn what to expect, you know, taking first-timers is fun, but yeah, I could enjoy Hollywood Studios without it, which means not going to Hollywood Studios.
The takeoff is infinitely what that attraction is all about.
But I will continue to ride it just for the sake of the takeoff, though.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's fun. Absolutely. It's fun. I just, you know, after that first time, it's like, it's not as intense and crazy as it seems to be for, you know, the first time.
I think Disney World kind of has a problem with shows in general. Like, it's not their fault. It's really hard for a show to give you the exact same wow factor as the first time you saw it. But, I mean, bless Disney's heart, they have shows that have been there for 25 years now, and it's really hard to get that
How
first...
do we get on shows? Are you going to a
That's
show
my
right
next
now?
Answer. That's my next answer.
Oh.
And I don't have a specific one. I mean, I do, but several. Like, I'm thinking Finding Nemo. I really was impressed the first time I saw it. But I cooled pretty quickly on that one, and partly because it's 45 minutes long. But, like, Indiana Jones, I mean, it's been there 25 years.
That's on my list.
Even Muppet Vision a little bit. Like, these are shows that I'm still glad they're there, but it's really hard for me to force myself to watch them again just because they haven't changed.
No, I think Indy, of those ones that you mentioned, I still enjoy Nemo and Muppets. But Indy, definitely. The last time I saw it, like, right after the first scene, I was like, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
And then you realize, and I think, too, it has to do with the set changes, you know, take forever. Just like that stupid car show where you're just, like, so much downtime in between it. And so, anyways. Yeah, Andy, I have a restaurant. Can I mention a restaurant?
Yeah, I'm curious.
I put Le Cellier on my list as far as things I cooled to as well. I remember our first trip. Was it our first and second trip we went there?
Have you been there more than once?
I know I have. I think I went with my brother when he came down and his friends as well. But I just remember the last time I went was right after, one, they increased it to a 2-point restaurant on the dining plan. And they also raised the prices. And I also remember the quality and the quantity of the food that you received drastically decreased. To the point that I was like... Wait. We used to get blah, 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 blah. And it's like, oh, we don't offer that anymore. And so
now we just get blah.
And the steak was like the size of your, like the size of your palm. It wasn't even a big, not the whole hand, just the palm. Whereas I remember the first time we went, good sized steak, cooked really well. Like it was a really decent restaurant. Now I feel like they just were able to lower the quality simply because they know it will still book up, so.
Well, I think they moved away from like the big old steakhouse, with the manly kind of steaks. And when they went to Signature Dining and, Two Points and all that, I think they brought it up to fine dining standards, which unfortunately typically means smaller entrees. And, the whole point of fine dining is to enjoy a soup and then a starter and then an entree and then a cheese plate or dessert. That's the whole thing. So it's multiple smaller things as opposed to one big thing, but I feel you.
Did you have any more on your list, Jeremy?
No.
Okay. Well, I just want to mention two more. One is related to restaurants, and that's the dining plan. This is something that I loved the first couple times we went because it really is convenient. And then once you get there, the fact that you can order anything on any menu in the places you go to, that's impressive. And you can get a value out of it. But the more I look into it, unless you're very strategic, you can easily get ripped off with that thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not quite as adamant now as I was back in the day of using the dining plan. But as far as attractions go, the last one I had was the Great Movie Ride. And this is solely because of those on-ride narrators. But the first time I rode it, it was like, ooh, what movie are we going to see next? Because I'm a movie buff and I loved seeing those scenes. But now it's just painful. Oh,
yeah.
Those tour guides. All right, well, let's get away from the negative and talk about some things that maybe first-timers need to hear because we've really come to love them, even if we didn't so much at first sight. So what are some of those for you guys?
The first one I thought of was Festival of the Lion King. And you all know that I do not have a lot of love to spread around for Festival of the Lion King still. But going again, not sitting up under the dadgum, I don't even know what it was. It was like a room. It felt like I was completely separated from the action. Not sitting there. I think the fact that the second time I saw it was not in Camp Minimiki. It's after they moved it to Africa. The theater was nicer. The outside, at least. The facade. The theater's the same. But the outside, the theming, felt more like this makes sense. I didn't feel like at Camp Minimiki, I felt like I was entering like the back door of this random building. And then here's the Lion King show. But so I think that could grow on me. I don't think it'll ever be my favorite. But as far as we're talking about, first time was bad. Second time was a little better. Room for growth. Festival of the Lion King.
Yeah, I still don't know why you didn't open to that show initially, but whatever.
Well, to be fair, Jeremy, you and I talk about how much we love it. And I do. But it was very forgettable the first time I saw it, to be completely honest. The four narrators, I didn't really connect to them at all, and I like certain elements. That was fine, but it was on my list too because the more I see it, and especially having seen it with my nephews, it's really going to be one of my favorite things at Disney World.
I connected to the narrators, but maybe it's just because I'm very proud of my African heritage.
Yes,
but
I can see
anyways.
That.
Mm. On my list was the Jungle Cruise, and again, this is something that I love now, and I appreciate it for the history and for the goofiness that it is. But I think the first time you ride it, if you don't have any of that in your background, you're kind of like, boy, this is stupid. And particularly, the jokes by the skippers, which, of course, now, if you have a little bit of knowledge, they're intentionally corny and they're intentionally bad. The audio animatronics in some parts seem to lack it compared to other more modern animatronics. So it's very easy to judge this attraction simply on face value. Of course, now I love it and I appreciate it for all that it is. But boy, that first time we wrote it, I just remember being like, oh boy, they need some new things on this. Shut this down because it's rough.
I might, if I may, and we can talk about these together, I might group two more things into just a group of, like, you got to know a little history before you appreciate it.
Yeah.
I think. Or you just, I think it's just something about going back and certain things latch on to you because of, you know, when you experience at a certain time and things. Jungle Cruise was on that list, along with the Enchanted Tiki Room, the Tomorrowland Transit Authority People Mover, and the Carousel of Progress. And I think a little history on Tiki Room and Carousel goes a long way to appreciating it as a Disney fan. And for People Mover, I think you just have to know what it is and when to go. You know, it's not something you want to do in the middle of the day. It's an evening attraction, relaxing, you know, laid back, castles all lit up, Tomorrowland's all lit up. I think those things, you know, over time, they grow on you. And obviously with anything like this, you build a certain nostalgia factor for
them. See, I think I loved People Mover from the beginning.
I was going to say that.
I just remember being like, we just get to sit and enjoy. Okay, thank you. Yes.
Yeah. Well, see, tired. When I went, the first times that I went to any of these was with my parents. And my parents, they liked Disney World. And they still like Disney World, but they were never the Disney fan that I am, and they still aren't. So, you know, Jungle Cruise to them is, you know, snooze fest, Tiki Room, who cares, People Mover, waste of time, Carousel of Progress, eh, you know. So that's the first impressions I ever remember was, what's the Tiki Room? Oh, it's just a boring show. We aren't going to do that. And then Jungle Cruise, it's just a boring little boat ride with corny jokes. I think they've gotten a little better since then to appreciate the things because of memories, you know, we made there. But it's just one of those things that stuck with me for a long time until I was like 9, 10, and I really began to come into my Disney fanness. And I was like, you know what? I like this Jungle Cruise thing. I like Tiki Room and People Mover. And those things just seem to click. It's like an evolutionary characteristic of Disney fans. At some point, those things just click, and you like them and love them. So that's certainly something that grew after the first impression.
I have two things to say about that list. First of all, Tiki Room grew on me only because the first time we saw it, it was that awful management version. So that wasn't hard to build on. Jungle Cruise was hands down my least favorite attraction that first trip. Like, I don't know if you remember, but our second trip, it was closed for refurbishment. It was like, hallelujah, we don't have to ride that thing. Thank goodness. Because I did not care for it at all. I was so mad that it was so hot that the animals weren't even real. I'm like, some of them aren't even animatronics. They're just stationary fake animals. And it made me so irate. And now, I love Jungle Cruise. I really genuinely do. Like, I have to ride it every time I go. And it's amazing how the tour guides on Great Movie Ride are good like 20% of the time, where I rarely have a lame skipper.
I've had a lame skipper before, but anyways.
They got a pill for that. I remember, I think the time Jungle Cruise clicked for me was when I was in middle school. We went, and this was a terrible trip. It was one of those days in the Magic Kingdom before, you know, band competition. All my middle school band was there with me and all this stuff. We got there right at park opening, and the first thing we did was Jungle Cruise. And that sounds like, why in the world would you do that first thing? But it's because it was there. It was wide open line. I mean, nothing. And it was perfect morning. That there's some steam coming up off of the water, and it, you know, through all the trees, it made the sun, you know, you could see the rays shining through the trees. I was like, this is perfect. And the music was playing, and you really got that jungle feel. And sometimes they have the fog pumping out at the beginning anyway, and you still get that nice sunshine through the trees. But I remember that specifically, like, this is the perfect setting for this attraction.
Mm-hmm. I do blame you a little bit, Matt, for not setting us up for that. Like, I feel like if I took someone the first time... Listen, you are the hands-down best tour guide of any place I've ever been to. And you... I mean, Jeremy and I are obsessed with Disney World now, partly because of you. But I will say, for Jungle Cruise, I will probably tell people, listen, there are going to be really corny jokes, and it's not exactly an e-ticket attraction, just so you know.
See, I always think about that with people that are first-timers when we go, but then I don't want to downsell it before they experience it.
Yeah,
you know, once we, like, when those guys, some of my friends came down from Kentucky a few years ago, we did the Tiki Room, and after it, you know, I didn't say anything going in it. After it, they're like, what in the world was that?
Yeah, yeah. Some things need a build-up.
I tell them, and some of them have some, you know, artistic abilities to them, and they understood, you know, some of that stuff. And we did it again later, and they're like, you know what? Knowing all that about Walt Disney and animatronics and, you know, thinking about all that that made possible for movies and special effects and everything else, then that kind of changes things, and it does. But I think you need to have one good – it's like Walt Disney said. You just need to have one good failure, you know, when you're done. That first experience just needs to be like, what? And then you say, yeah, this is about this. And then you go back and like, what? And this is great.
And then you're like, what? And he said, huh? Yeah. No, I can see that. And for other attractions, I'm so glad you didn't say anything because there were little surprises along the way that I didn't see coming. But for that one, it was not a good surprise. I was like, well, this sucks. I'm sweating a lot.
Yeah, okay. I have another surprising one, maybe for both of you, because, again, this is one of those the things we're talking about. You know, I don't have a lot of love to spread around for these things, but I have to say the first time I wrote it was like, eh, and the second time, and then after that, I learned to appreciate things about it. Maybe it's because you just have to learn to appreciate things about it, and that is Under the Sea with Nemo and Friends, and as much as I loved and miss the Living Seas as it was, and as disappointing as, you know, the screen technology and the flat lighting and the weird sets are for the Under the Seas with Nemo and Friends, I really do enjoy walking through that queue, because you got to walk through a long queue to get to that attraction as if it was going to need it. And then really that finale just kind of grew on me with the song, and just that's really like a reveal that everyone is always kind of like, whoa, and they're in there with the fish, and the fish are swimming around, and there a dolphin comes around at just the perfect time. You know, that kind of makes that attraction bearable for me.
Okay.
And I might also say the same thing about Nemo the Musical while we're on it. The music kind of catches and grows on you.
Yeah.
And then so the second, third, fourth time, it's like, yeah, this is more enjoyable than I originally thought.
Okay, I would agree with you about the musical. Probably not the attraction.
Mm.
The attraction still hasn't grown on me. In fact, I only...
You're not debating anymore.
Your Honor, I would like to point out... anyways. Okay, so my next one is Country Bear Jamboree. And that is the first time we saw it. I remember thinking, what is this hokey mess? And I was going through a period in my life where I was rejecting country music like hardcore, because you know, I went to school in Nashville, and
I think everybody goes through that,
surrounded by rednecks, and I just started to associate all that Luke Bryan, Blake Shelton crap, and I still think it's all crap. But so Country Bear Jamboree, I was like, oh, this is so hokey, get this back to what's that awful, not awful, but Opryland. This is not Opryland. This is Disney World. And anyway, so did not enjoy it the first time. However, I have come around to it, as you all know, to the point that I actually find myself watching particularly the Vacation Hoedown from Japan on YouTube more often than I would like to admit. So Country Bear Jamboree, way to go.
It's funny to hear you cast negative thoughts on something that's hokey.
What's that supposed to mean?
I mean,
Dolly Parton.
I was just about to say that. People who are listening to this show are like, wait, don't you love Dolly Parton?
The remnants of my country music days can be summed up in Dolly Parton and Reba McEntire.
And Reba. Yeah, Reba. And, I mean, Golden Girls is pretty, like, quintessentially hokey 80s sitcom.
Yeah, but it has not, that's not country. When I think hokey, I think, like...
I don't mean country, hokey. You said hokey, and I'm thinking, yeah, Dolly Parton is hokey and country.
I'm redefining the word hokey. Dolly is hokey, but she's classy hokey.
She's hokey pokey.
She puts both boobs in.
No, but I do like the Country Bear Jamboree. It's sad to me.
Boobs in, actually.
It's sad to me that it got such a terrible film, because I do think there's potential there for a really fun film. You get those characters.
I kind of thought the movie was funny.
Here's the thing. The movie is the... I think I've said this before. The movie is the exact same plot as the 2011 Muppets movie. I mean, it is exactly the same. You have this outcast who is getting the band back together. It's really what it is. And then, you know, he doesn't...
Blues Brothers.
Totally. Yeah, in a way. So, you know, it's all rehash. But I think, too, also... Country Bears, not long after we saw it for the first time, got a huge refurb. And that really cleaned up a lot of the audio, and it refreshed the AAs. And I think that changed a lot, too. Because I remember, man, I just remember particularly the buffalo and the moose on the wall. Like, the mouths were so off to the audio, and it sounded terrible. And then after that, it looked
well.
Better.
That old Jingle Bells, it's the host of the thing. His hand is still dripping, as far as I know. I checked up on that the other day.
Oh, no.
What's going on there? Why they don't fix that? I don't know.
I would love to see them bring Vacation Hoedown, though. If you've never seen that, just Google it, and you'll enjoy it.
Great Outdoors.
Yeah. Mm. Anyways, mm-hmm. Okay. Somebody else go.
Okay, I'm going to name a few attractions that are linked together in this because I've never ridden them still to this day. At Disney World, at least. I have never ridden Liberty Square Riverboat. I have never ridden any of the Main Street vehicles. And so probably my first couple of trips, I was like, they don't really need those. Those are kind of silly and old-fashioned. And now I cannot imagine Magic Kingdom with those things. They just make, even if you never ride them, those Main Street vehicles add so much. You always talk about kinetic energy. And I think that's exactly what those Main Street vehicles do. And the Liberty Square Riverboat, I mean, you all of a sudden feel like you were in the 19th century, out in the Midwest, nothing around. And I'm so glad those things are there. Even though on my first trip, I probably wouldn't have said that.
Are you planning to experience these things on your trip next month?
Sure, absolutely. If the Main Street vehicles are out and about, absolutely.
I think you should go out of your way to do so, Derek.
You got it.
You can do that before I get there.
You need some credibility to this.
You need some street cred.
No, you're absolutely right. And this is one of those trips where I need to do stuff like that. Like, I don't need to see Finding Nemo again. I don't need to see Indiana Jones again. I just want to take the time to leisurely stroll around the parks and do things that I have not done before.
All right, good.
Another one that I remember when I was little, just kind of being like, is Living with the Land. And I absolutely love Living with the Land now. Because when I was little, you know, all you really think about is that sterile educational greenhouse segment. And now I love that part, but even more so, I appreciate the stuff that comes at the beginning. You know, the dark ride segment with the rain and the waterfalls, and then the different ecosystems, the rainforest. I mean, it's very, very elaborate and wonderful. You know, it's got that Disney water ride smell, and then even the greenhouses are fun. I mean, heck, who doesn't want to see a Mickey Mouse shaped pumpkin or whatever the heck it is? I don't know. The land, and I might just throw in things that have grown on me over time. The two boat rides at World Showcase. I mean, alas, Maelstrom is no longer with us. But the first time I wrote it a long time ago, I was like, that's terrible. And
I mean, it was always pretty terrible, but I always loved it.
It's so short. It was anticlimactic. It was like, oh, it's over. But the kitschiness and the who knows what it is about it just grew on me. And I don't know that I ever shared my hatred for Grand Fiesta Tour when it started. I think I was really hateful toward it, but it kind of grew on me. And that's partly through the song. And now, especially with the animatronics at the end, it's just kind of something I've learned to live with. Like, it's there. It's like the refried beans on your plate at the Mexican restaurant. It's like, yeah, might as well.
That was a very apropos analogy because it's all Mexican.
I was going to say, I'm thinking that's borderline racist somewhere, but I don't know. I'll figure that out.
No.
I have two that might shock you. Not shock you, but shock you. First one, Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. First time I rode it, I was a little let down simply by how short it was. Now, of course, now that I have the expectation is there, I appreciate it infinitely because I love the animatronics. I love the storyline, all that. But I remember the first time riding it, we was like, whoa, oh, because it really is extremely short.
It's just a perfect little Disney ride.
I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying that the first time, second impressions, and my first impression was, eh.
You know, I'm going to be completely honest. I'm just remembering this now. I was the same way about Splash Mountain. I remember riding it in Disneyland back in 2000, my first Disney trip. And that was one of the ones I was excited about because, you know, they always show Splash Mountain on the commercials. It's an iconic Disney ride. And I remember being like, that was it? Like, even the highest drop didn't even feel all that high. And now, to me, that is quintessential Disney. It's got the dark ride elements. It's got the thrill elements. Like, I know people always drop Walt's name, and who knows what he would have liked, but I really feel like Walt would be so proud of Splash Mountain today. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yes. No, I think so.
But.
And then my other one is Illuminations. I remember our first trip, and of course you see Wishes, you see Fantasmic, and then we saw Illuminations, and it doesn't have the Disney-esque elements that you perhaps would expect, particularly on a first trip. And I remember thinking, well, that was great, but it sucked compared to Wishes.
Exactly.
But now I love Illuminations, even though I have said in the past, and I do agree that it's time for something new. I'm not discounting that, but it has infinitely grown on me, probably more than any other thing that I could say second impression.
Could not agree more. I still think the globe section like lasts for an eternity and like, okay, keep spinning, keep moving, let's get there. But yeah, that music and like it fits the World Showcase theme so well. It doesn't have that nostalgic factor like the other two. You said that. Like, it doesn't have the nostalgic thing. So the first time it was like, what the crap is this? This is so like touchy-feely, new agey. I don't know what's happening. But yeah.
But then when you leave, you're like, we're the best planet in the solar system. Yeah, where's your... Take that, Saturn.
Where's your people?
How many times have you won Miss Universe, Jupiter? None. Earthlings. Reigning champs.
You need to stop.
Illuminations, that whole Illuminations, Reflections of Earth that became the show with the Millennium Celebration in 1999-2000. That, I think in my mind, that kind of like solidified World Showcase's identity. I don't think it really had a central identity until then. They still had Illuminations. And even around the time of the 25th anniversary, I remember there being like international greetings, like during the beginning of Illuminations, like different languages and things. But there wasn't a cohesive, this is about Earth. And it really ties in all of Epcot, not just World Showcase, but the entire thing. And I think that world music, you know what Derek called new agey thing, kind of does that. It just kind of ties the whole thing in. When you got Celtic combined with African drums and everything and the prelude music, I think it just kind of solidified Epcot and World Showcase's identity. That's why it's so wonderful.
If you have never heard the Illuminations music, just go YouTube it right now. It is fantastic, and it will pump you up for the rest of the day, I guarantee you.
Mm-hmm.
And don't forget Jim Cummings' narration at the beginning.
Sure.
Yeah.
That too.
Winnie the Pooh. Winnie the Pooh narrates.
I was just thinking that. More like Tigger to me when I hear it.
Hello. Hello. I can't.
He doesn't. He sounds more like Tigger than Pooh.
I think so too.
Oh, bother.
But he, I remember he tweeted the first time he saw it, And it was just like a couple years ago, he was like, I'm at Epcot and I forgot I did the narration for this. And he's like, first time I'm hearing it. And all of a sudden my voice pops over the speakers. I was like, oh.
Yeah. Anyways. Like 15 years late, but.
Wouldn't that be nice to have so many jobs paying you that you forget some of the ones you did? Mm-hmm. Life. Okay, I'm going to mention one that's so random, but I thought about it today and it's true. And it's Mickey ears. I have never seen the purpose for these. Like, they're fine. I mean, they're not going to stop selling them. That's a classic Disney souvenir. But until I bought my first pair this year, I could have, you know, given or taken the ears. They meant nothing to me. And now I own two pairs, and I want more. Like, I love them. And
well, that's the thing. Derek shocked me when we were at Disneyland, because not only did he buy Mickey ears, he wore them.
I did.
And I just never picked Derek out as a Mickey ears kind of person. And
no, not at all.
No, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to wear him to Target.
I thought that was just a picture opportunity.
No, he literally wore them all night long.
And the next day.
I'm just disappointed.
I wore them the next day after Club 33, too.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, partly because it was the 60th celebration ears, and like we were celebrating the 60th anniversary, so pretty much after this year, I can't wear them again. But I don't know. I just felt like one of the Disney peeps. It was exciting to me.
Yeah,
I don't know who you are.
I know. It's weird.
Exactly.
It's weird. They must have like some sort of magical powers. Like once I put them on, I was like, oh, I never want to take these off. And now I really want the BB-8 ones. Have you seen those?
What?
Have you seen them? They're awesome.
No, but you... What? Who? What? Huh?
Wait. Huh? I love BB-8.
I know, but they're just like... I haven't seen them, but I'm imagining any of those character ones are so tacky looking.
It looks just like the very top of BB-8. You know, like he's got a round body, you know? And it's just the top has been like cut off. And it's even got little antennas. Antennae.
Interesting, Derek. Interesting.
I mean, of course, I have this sitting on my desk right now, too, so...
Yes, Matt bought the Figment, the...
Figurine.
Hippo from It's a Small World, and the Big Al figurines. Oh, and the elephant. Did you buy all of them? And Monstro?
Oh, yeah, over a period of time, yeah, because they're like $21.
Oh, gosh. I have gone on and on about these things. I love them. And now that I see them, I have to have them.
See, what's the cool part, though, is on the bottom, our listeners cannot see this, but they have a little, that one just says Figment. But the others have the attraction name, like the Hippo has It's a Small World. Yeah. They're wonderful. But yeah, I would never have thought myself as I'm going to buy some porcelain figurines either, but things just happen.
No, I could picture you with porcelain figurines.
Okay.
I'm just thinking of that. You have that room of porcelain dolls, so it just fits.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I think after tonight's episode, our listeners might be cooling on our podcast.
Oh, no.
I'm just pegging. No,
it has been 79. That's a lot. That's a lot, you guys. 79 episodes.
Yeah.
But we hope you're not cooled off on us yet. We will be back next week. But until then, why don't you go follow us on Twitter or Facebook and communicate with us over there if you aren't already. You can find us at Mad Chatters on Twitter. You can just search for Mad Chatters Podcast on Facebook. We love it when you leave reviews on iTunes. That's just one way you can help out our show. So if you could do that, that would be great. You can always send your emails to comments@madchatters.net. And that does it. So we will see you, hopefully, next week.
Take a little time to find the magic in every day.
Bye-bye now.